What Hirsch is doing is making it hard for himself. In other words, he knows what's out there. He knows the enticement of the secular German world. He knows that he is losing young people, as Geiger knew so well, who are leaving the Jewish fold. He needed to construct an argument that would somehow persuade and argue with this secularized temper. He does so in the context of 19 letters. The first letter is actually a letter of written by a young student, a sophomore, a wise fool, who, after taking his first philosophy course at the university, now knows that there's no God, and there's no religion, there's no Judaism, there's no Christianity, there's no nothing, and he's a free thinker. And he writes to his rabbi back home, who is called Naftali, and he says, "Rabbi, all this stuff you've been feeding me is really nonsense. It doesn't really make any sense to me. And Judaism is a pain in the neck. I can't do my thing. I can't have a good social life. I can't enjoy the world. What do I need to be a Jew for?" So this first letter is very precious because it really presents the argument. Hirsch is not going to back down. He's going to give us the hardest argument, and then he's going to try to answer it. The argument against being Jewish, and then in the letters that follow, the additional 18 letters, he's going to give his answer. Let me give you a taste of what the student's letter sounds like. And let's see the arguments that Hirsch is constructing, which he then has to respond to. I'm reading sort of in the middle here. "Every religion I believe," this is, again, the student speaking to the rabbi, "should bring man nearer to his ultimate goal. What else can this goal be than the attainment of happiness and perfection? But to what happiness does Judaism bring its adherents? From time immemorial, misery and slavery have been their lot. They were always either misunderstood or despised by the other nations. While the rest of mankind climbed to the summit of culture, prosperity, and wealth, the Jewish people remain poor in everything that makes human beings great and noble, and that beautifies and dignifies our lives. The law itself prohibits all enjoyment. It is a constant hindrance to the enjoyment of life. For 2,000 years, we have been tossed about, driven from the paths of happiness. And as for perfection, what culture, what conquest have Jews wrought compared to those of the Egyptians, Phoenicians, Greeks, Romans, Italians, French, English, or Germans? Robbed of all the characteristics of nationhood, we are nevertheless deemed a nation. And every one of us, by his very birth, is doomed to form a link in that endless chain of misery. It is the law that is chiefly responsible for all this. It enforces our isolation and thereby arouses suspicion and hostility on the part of others. It invites contempt by its stress on humbled submissiveness. It discourages the pursuit of the formative arts. Its dogmas bar the way to free thought. Through this enforced isolation, the law removes every incentive to achievement in the sciences and arts. And what about our own Jewish lore? It perverts the mind by cramming it with petty subtleties until it becomes incapable of producing simple and straight thoughts and opinions. Thus, I've always wondered how you, who have sampled the beauty of the works of Virgil, Tasso, Shakespeare, and penetrated the ideas of Leibniz and Kant, can find pleasure in the crude and tasteless writings of the Old Testament or in the illogical arguments of the Talmud. And what effect does this law have on our emotional life? The broad principles of universal morality are narrowed into anxious worry about insignificant trifles. Nothing is taught except to fear God." This goes on and on and on. But you see, it's a very powerful argument. He is not hiding anything here. This is the argument. What do we need this law for? What do we need this burden? Why do we have to have this around our neck? How does it add anything to our life? How does it add aesthetically? Why is the literature of the Jews more interesting than the literature of Western civilization? Why can't I be a great human being by educating myself in that world and not in this world? And here then is Hirsch's answer. I can't give you the 18 letters. I'm not going to try to cite them to you. But I want to somehow encapsulate them in two primary responses, which I think are very interesting in themselves and suggest a strategy how to deal with the question of being Jewish, and particularly being a Jew who observes all of the ceremonial law in the context of our modern age. The first argument that Hirsch makes is the argument Judaism needs to be discovered intrinsically from within, organically comprehended. In this respect, Hirsch takes issue with a man we've already introduced into our course, Moses Maimonides, the 12th century Spanish Jewish philosopher.